this is what I found really interesting, is that you basically became like a free agent within the Army and get tasked with, hey, go find out what you can about this UFO stuff, which is an amazing story in itself.
Well, yeah, one of the things that happened is, as I said, I was doing some of these briefings, and actually it was what we used to call the distaff side, wives side. Somebody knew the wife of the guy who had become the four-star, he had been a four-star general and was now the Undersecretary of Defense, the number two guy in the Pentagon. And so as the story went, I got called in to meet him. There was just the two of us, which was very unusual. I was still a lieutenant colonel at the time. So for an 05 to be meeting at those levels without somebody in between nodding their heads was unusual. And we talked about a wide range of things. And his last comment was, well, who do you work for? And I told him it was with this General Treffery and Max Thurman, who was the DSPR at the time. And so I went down, and that was just about 12:30, and about a little after 4 that afternoon, the executive officer came in and said, "You don't work here tomorrow morning. You know, you've been moved." And that led to a whole series of incidents that went on for years.
Well, it's kind of like limbo, right? I mean, you have somebody you report to, but you're moving around, not necessarily attached to any unit, not like a normal Army lieutenant colonel.
Well, it was so bad that I a few years later I bumped into a guy that I knew who had was in the military personnel center who was responsible for us, and he said, "You know, I had your record sitting in my desk drawer because there were no place to put them."
All right. So when does the day come where you are given the marching orders, so to speak, to start running down some of these stories about UFOs that allows you to march into these offices and start asking questions?
It's kind of the other way around. Marching orders didn't come down. Again, I had a high degree of flexibility and decided to do it. I was in a position where I was now, understand, I had a day job. I was at that time doing technology integration. I had the technology base, had a lot of high-tech stuff going on. But because of that, had many, many contacts both inside and outside the military. And had met somebody who had mentioned, you know, whispered about Area 51, which you only whispered in those days, and said, "We know about it," and all that. So we said, "Well, why don't we look around?" So this was more on the self-initiated side. And then as it gained some momentum, that's when we started moving up the chain. And what I would do, one of the techniques was I would always ask for something. You know, let's get them a little bit pregnant. And across the board, I was always granted, you know, these were small things, like I want a point of contact, I want access to information, and those sorts of things. But then what we described initially, everybody said, that's interesting, but we don't do that. We don't have a requirement. You know, keep us informed, et cetera, et cetera. And that just proved to be true across the board.
Not only inside government, but outside government. In the book, you described a number of very well-placed people that you talk to. You start, as you mentioned, looking at Area 51. That leads you to the Skunk Works in Lockheed, where you meet this guy, Dr. Ron Blackburn. Tell us who he is, what his interest was, and where you two took it.
Well, Ron was just a retired Air Force lieutenant colonel who was interested in, at that time, working for Ben Rich. Now, Ben, who was then the president, became, you know, much more significant because we always thought that, you know, if anybody's in the loop, it would be Ben Rich. It was, as I said, the head of the Skunk Works. That was the go-to place for super special airplanes. They had brought the U-2, the SR-71, the F-17, what was known as a stealth fighter, though it never was a fighter. I mean, these guys had an amazing track record. And so we also thought, you know, if anybody's doing it, if anybody's inside the knowledge loop, it would be him. And he didn't. He was interested. Very supportive. I actually assigned a guy, a different person, who was sort of my point of contact, who went out, did a lot of looking, and he had a shopping list. You know, he says, I want the propulsion system, I want this, I want that.
And he expressed an interest in UFOs. I know I've seen the letter, you reference it in the book, where he wrote a letter about UFOs as being unfunded opportunities, but he also said he was interested in UFOs in general.
Oh, he was. He was quite supportive. As I said, and I tell the story in the book, I had really one negative briefing or consequence. Everybody else was, you know, we had put the briefing package together well enough that it attracted attention. Now, one of the things I think we ought to throw in here, you're aware of this, but we had sort of made it FOIA proof. FOIA was the Freedom of Information Act that had come out. And, you know, there's, I'm sure lots of the people listening are probably part of the FOIA process. The people who designed it, it never dawned on them that at one time 50% of the requests for FOIA information was about UFOs, which was just, you know, driving organizations wild. So we did a couple of things. One, we called it the Advanced Theoretical Physics Program because we didn't think anybody would stumble onto that. And second, there were no written records. Now, I found out since there were a few people who went back and wrote things up that they probably shouldn't have, but there were no official records kept at all. I mentioned Richard Dolan in there because he had listed certain dates for meetings, and my guess is, well, maybe they're correct because, you know, I didn't have a record of those dates, but there were many, many, many more, and I was the only one who sat in on all of them.
Meetings of this group, this ad hoc group of both civilian and military folks who were exchanging information and thoughts and questions about UFOs.
Right.
There was a book that was written by a guy named Bloom. I think he worked for the New York Times.
Out there. Yeah.
And it describes somebody very much like you. What'd you think of that book?
Well, I mean, people have hypothesized it was me. He got most of it wrong. There's no doubt about that. But he had called me, and that I've got to say I was really shocked. I was working at Los Alamos. I'd retired from the military by the time he got into it. And there was General Fouts, who clearly was talking out of school and had given him some information, though he was very interesting because he knew very little about our group other than meeting with us. But he was then the head of what they had something then called the IC staff, the Intelligence Community Staff, and they were the integrating agency. So he was in a position that would see information from all of the various agencies that was then, you know, you can't go to the president and say, well, CIA thinks this and DIA thinks that. You know, you got to come in with a united position. And that was their job, was to integrate positions on information going forward. And, you know, again, as from an organizational perspective, had no knowledge of it at all. Not on their scope.
Back to Ben Rich for a second. Now, okay, you go looking for UFOs. Who might have information about it? Ben Rich is a likely suspect as a head of Lockheed Skunk Works. He
right.
should know. He tells you, yeah, I'm really interested in UFOs. He assigns a guy to go find out what they can. Then he comes back and says, we don't know anything. We don't see any recovered flying saucer parts. We don't see any secret black programs.
Right.
Why would he have to tell you, though? If he, you know...
Have to?
Yeah,
he
would
does,
he have
but,
to?
But the point, well, because A, does not have to. B, he does. And remember, my relationship with him went on for several years. It started when I was in the military. It continued after I was at Los Alamos and brought him out there. It would be easy just to fart me off, you know, to say, you know... and point me in another direction. One of the things I point out in there is that I had stumbled into black boxes before and got my hand slapped. And the point is, when you do that, you know that you've hit something. You may not know what's in it, but you know you've bumped into something.
And you're not supposed to know it.
Yeah, and you get turned off really quickly. That was part of the reason, as I mentioned, I went to these various agencies at the senior level. I would ask for something. If they're trying to keep you away, you're not going to get any help. You're going to get a, you know, probably polite, thank you very much, keep me informed, and goodbye. Again, that just never happened.